May it please the court. I'm Jim Blackburn, and I'm here representing the Coastal Habitat Alliance along with David Kahn, and we have elected to split our time, which hopefully will work out. We're here to talk about a case that is very troubling in many respects. The Coastal Habitat Alliance is an alliance of noted environmental groups. It includes the King Ranch. It includes basically both property interest and environmental interest in the lower in the Texas coast. We're complaining about Commissioner Jerry Patterson, the Texas General Land Office, the three commissioners of the Public Utility Commission, and two private defendants who are wind developers. We're here on constitutional challenges involving both preemption and due process. And our claim is basically that there is a process that was guaranteed under the Texas Coastal Zone Management Program that was approved by the federal government, and that there were representations and processes that were created in that application. And as a result of that, both preemption and due process claims apply. Now, Judge Yackel dismissed our claim on the basis that we did not have standing. And he found that in a couple of respects. And I'd like to start off by talking a bit about what I would call a traditional understanding of standing. I come from an environmental law background. That's what I've practiced my whole career. And what we're talking about, I think, certainly qualifies in a traditional context of environmental standing. We're talking about tremendously high stakes from a natural environmental standpoint. We're talking about the last great habitat of what Texas Parks and Wildlife calls the last great habitat of Texas. It's a convergence area for bird migratory corridors. It involves the Laguna Madre, which is one of the three hypersaline lagoons in the world. It involves one of the most wonderful natural experience areas that you could ever hope to find. Now, in our pleading, we pled specific injury. We pled a concrete interest on behalf of several of these groups. We identified, for example, with Coastal Bend Audubon Society that they use the area for bird watching, that it was part of recreational trips that they have. The Lower Laguna Madre Foundation, we identified, which is a member of the Coastal Habitat Alliance, uses Laguna Madre for fishing, for bird watching. Walt Kittleberger, who is the head of that organization.
I think the concern of the district court, and I suspect our concern, is more in the details of how this regulatory scheme works.
Okay. Let me, if I may, then explain that as best I can. The coastal management process of the state of Texas was basically a process. Well, first of all, let me back up. Coastal management is under the Coastal Zone Management Act of 1973, the federal standard.
As I understand your argument, you're saying that they misrepresented, actually, to the federal government that they had a hearing process in place.
That is correct.
That would allow people like the Alliance to challenge or at least raise questions about environmental issues.
There was a consistency review process and a hearing process.
And your position is that there was a misrepresentation in the application that was approved by the federal government, and even though there was no hearing process because they represented to the federal government, you have rights that flow from that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Then that basically, in that application, which was accepted by the federal government, representations were made that particularly with regard to wind energy or with electric generating facilities, which would include wind energy facilities, there was a regulatory process and that it would be subjected to what's called consistency review. Now, under federal coastal management, you're not required to participate. But if
your argument is you recognize you don't have a private right of action, you've conceded that.
We concede that, yes, okay. Your Honor.
So let's get right down to the preemption and supremacy clause arguments. They argue this is a funding mechanism, and the only thing that could happen under this scheme is the secretary could say no funds for Texas.
Well, that is certainly one response that could be there, but we believe that because the state made the representation that 1446C was in fact in place, that the state's passage of 1446C0 is nullified as being inconsistent with the approved coastal management plan as it relates to the coastal zone of Texas. I think that is basically the preemption conflict. The state of Texas could not amend that provision after submitting and basically representing to the federal government that they had authority to do certain things. That amendment occurred, no question about it. I think we spent a lot of time arguing about when it occurred. But the bottom line is Texas made a representation that has never been retracted, that has never been changed, and they received federal funding pursuant to that representation.
How is the funding done every year? I mean, how's this done?
I believe it's on a yearly basis. It may be biannual, but it is basically an application that the money is received for planning funds, and then there's also what's called CAB money, coastal energy. It's money from offshore energy that is distributed pursuant to the Coastal Zone Management Act as well. So there's significant amounts of money over time.
And one of the briefs, I think it's the private defendant's briefs, points out that in 2007 there was a final review where at least it appears to the federal government or that oversight body appears to acknowledge that there are no wind farm regulations in effect in Texas.
I don't think that's actually what it was stated. What was stated was that there were a number of submissions that were made and approved by the federal government. As far as I know, there has never been brought to the attention of the federal government that this law, 1446C, was changed. If the federal government had in fact acknowledged that, we would dismiss this litigation right now.
Well, have you gone to the secretary and said this is a problem because Texas represented 1995, I believe?
It has been relayed to them, and I don't know what the status is of their processing of that complaint, but a complaint was lodged during the course of this whole procedure.
But they've continued to fund it. And I did actually look up on the internet the statement they were looking at. It's kind of oblique, but it does appear to recognize that there are few, if any, regulations of wind farms in Texas.
And there are none.
And that report seems to recognize that. So what are
But that was not anything that was formally noticed in the Federal Register, and it was approved as a change to the program. The program itself has never been changed with regard to 1446C. It is still on the books. It is still a representation. It is still part of the agreement, even though it was changed years ago. The state of Texas has not specifically asked to be released from that obligation, and the federal government has not specifically responded.
Then wouldn't the remedy be that the federal government would stop the funding rather than the alliance getting involved?
Well, I mean, as we see, the remedy from a preemption standpoint is that 1446C-0 cannot be applied in the Texas coastal zone until the program is changed.
Is there in the federal law that is being violated?
A requirement? I'm sorry.
Maybe they ought to inquire about the Texas management plan, but you're not here to force the Texas officials to apply Texas law. You're here saying that some sort of a federal right has been violated. I haven't seen anything in any federal law or regulation yet that's being violated by Texas. Tell me exactly what it is.
Under the Federal Coastal Zone Management Act, Texas has to show that
they don't have to.
Well, they have voluntarily applied. Once they apply, they said they would meet certain requirements, one of which is to regulate electric generation facilities on the coast. This law took that power away, yet the representation to the federal government was that they had that authority, and that's the basis upon which they were accepted into the program. They could not have been accepted into the program had they told or had they represented the exact situation as it was.
That may or may not be true. But what? So what? Well, so what does the federal government have to do that you can complain about?
Well, it's actually, I think, the other way around. The state of Texas is asking for admission into a program, and in order to get the money and the proceeds that they wish to get, they have to do certain minimum things. They subjected voluntarily to the jurisdiction of the federal government.
Well, if that's true, shame on Texas, but I don't see any right established by the federal government that's been violated. Maybe they ought to do something they haven't done, but I don't see any right that Texas has violated.
I understand. May I defer now to Mr. Kahn?
May it please the Court, I'd like to start by answering Judge Owen's question and then go to your question. Judge Owen, I would call it a commitment more than a misrepresentation. In the Texas Coastal Management Program, the state made a commitment, and it had to make commitments in order to join the program.
All right. If, so let's say 5 years ago, the Secretary said, aha, it has come to our attention that you're not living up to this commitment because you do not regulate wind farms. No more money for you, Texas. Where are we?
I'm sorry.
What if 5 years ago the Secretary had said, because Texas does not regulate wind farms, no more money for Texas?
Right. They could say that.
Where are we? Where would we be then?
I have no idea because I don't know what Texas would do, but the
Let's
federal...
assume they did nothing. They just did not regulate wind farms, left the statute in place as is, and here we are today. What rights would the alliance have under that?
Oh, if Texas had properly notified the federal government of the change, federal law absolutely requires that notice and opportunity.
No, let's assume they did not notify.
Okay.
The Secretary said, you know, it's come to our attention that you made this commitment and you didn't live up to it from day one. It wasn't accurate from the get-go. We're cutting off funding. Now, where does that leave the rights of the alliance?
Well, the alliance, I suppose, could challenge the federal government's decision as being the wrong response, but that's not our complaint.
I'm trying to get the source of your rights.
Oh, the source of our rights comes from the Constitution.
If the Secretary says, we're complying with federal law, Texas has not lived up to its commitment, we are revoking funding, where are you then?
If the Secretary had revoked Texas funding, then there is no coastal management program and we have no rights. That's not what happened here. I guess that's the best answer.
So what if the Secretary says, okay, my second hypothetical, we know you're not in compliance, we are not going to revoke your funding, then
right.
Then where are we?
The Secretary has a certain range of what I guess I'll call prosecutorial discretion or agency discretion in terms of which violations they choose to enforce. And there are a fair number of cases which say or which limit the ability of individuals in our position to challenge decisions by agencies that choose not to enforce. And so when an agency makes that choice, then persons in the position of the alliance need to look to see, is there a different way for private people to enforce the commitments that were made? And sometimes the statutes themselves directly give that, and that's not here. Okay? And so sometimes the Constitution itself gives that. And the Constitution, we rely on two provisions. So this is, I suppose, in response to Judge Reveley's question. You won't find our right located in the CZMA or the Texas CMP. It isn't there. Our right comes from the Supremacy Clause on the one hand and from the Due Process Clause on the other hand. The Supremacy Clause right exists because what Texas has done in three ways actually conflicts with federal law. The first way that it actually conflicts with federal law is that federal law requires, if the state joins the coastal management program, federal law requires the states to regulate construction in the coastal zone, and Texas acknowledged that duty to regulate under federal law in its coastal management submission. So insofar as the state...
But the federal law also provides a remedy if Texas fails to comply with federal law, and for whatever reason that remedy has not been invoked by the federal government. So,
and that's why there's no private right of action under the statute, but the Supremacy Clause says even if, and this is the importance of not only this court's Planned Parenthood decision, but every single other circuit court, and we listed about five of them in the brief, every single circuit court that has looked at this question has said, even if there is no private right of action under federal law, if the state's action by adopting a statute conflicts with the federal law. Yes, it does conflict with federal law three different ways.
I read the federal law as entirely voluntary.
It's voluntary until they officially choose to join it. And once they choose to join, it's not voluntary. And that is an essential point, Judge. If we haven't persuaded you that they must comply, we have a big problem.
What does the federal law say that the federal agency is to do if they don't like what the Texas management people did or the Texas legislature did the certificate that's required? What does the federal law say that the federal agency has to do?
The federal law says that the federal agency does not do anything until the state submits a proposed change, which the state never has done. When the state submits a proposed change, the federal government, along with the state, must give notice and opportunity for our people.
Let's be accurate. The law on the books at the time the application was filed did not regulate wind farms. The application could reasonably be read to say that it did, but that's not the state of state law. So you're asking us to say the Constitution, we should say, makes what the state of Texas said was state law, which wasn't state law that they can't change without notice. That's your position.
Our position is that the state law at the time of submission of the application did say what the submission said. After submission of the application, the Texas legislature changed the law, but they didn't tell anybody in the federal government. And in the submission to the federal government, the state made commitments. Now, what's important here is that the commitment that is made in the submission is that there will be no building or operation of energy generating facilities, and this is true whether it's coal plants, nuclear plants, or wind farms. No one will build or operate these plants in the coastal zone. We're not seeking to invalidate the law outside the coastal zone. But insofar as anyone wants to build in the coastal zone, there must be a consistency review process or it won't be built. And that commitment exists independent of whether the old law exists or the new law exists. It's a clear commitment. There will be no construction or operation in the coastal zone unless there is a consistency review. And so the point here is that insofar as the new statute purports to allow construction without a consistency review, that can't stand. And that's what we seek to have invalidated.
You want the statute invalidated under the Supreme Court.
Insofar as it operates within the coastal zone. And if we get that relief, which we believe we're entitled to under both of the constitutional clauses cited, then the effect is that either the state must find another way to provide consistency review, and there are possibilities. We've debated it. They say they don't have one. If they're right that they don't have a way to provide consistency review, then no one can build wind farms in the coastal zone until or unless the state submits to the federal government.
What do we do with the wind farms that are already built?
This is a good question, and here's my best answer to that. We're looking for declaratory relief prospectively. There are facts on the ground. Injunctive relief must take into account equitable considerations. That's back to England. And frankly, we'd have a difficult time, I suspect, persuading any judge to tear down existing wind farms. What we would presumably be looking for is constraints on operations. So, for example, we're very concerned about what happens during big storms when the birds are flying off of the coast. Mr. Blackburn is more knowledgeable about this than I, but one of the huge concerns is that during big storms when birds are flying off of the coast, they will get literally sliced and diced because they won't see or be able to perceive these wind farms that are spinning very quickly. But the essence is that we would be looking, as to the already built wind farms, for some kind of constraints on operations, inequity. Prospectively, at least one of the developers was intending to build in several phases, and so far as I know, they're not all built. And therefore, we would be looking prospectively to limit their future construction if they're not all built. And for the rest of the Gulf Coast, we want the state defendants to apply the Texas Coastal Management Program as written until and unless they go back to the federal government and follow the notice and comment procedure.
Let me state a request to counsel and respond to it when you come up for your rebuttal. You obviously, and you know, you cannot enforce Texas law. If there's something wrong with the Texas law, you can't enforce it. Only if there's a federal law that's been violating that will lead to what you want by your public hearing. I haven't caught, maybe I missed it, but I do. I haven't caught anything in the briefs. I don't know that much about the case. But I want you, if you have it, or if you don't specifically have it, can give it to us in a few days, exactly what it is in the federal law that would require Texas to do something different. Exactly what the federal law requires for Texas to, not that it should do something different to be consistent, but what it requires that it be doing something. All right, thank you.
Are you asking him to respond that on rebuttal?
Rebuttal. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't know why I'm thinking of Don Quixote and the windmills.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Your Honor, this is actually a very quixotic expedition because primarily this is based on a mischaracterization of Texas law. And Judge Owen correctly noted that from the very beginning of this program, Texas law has been the same. Article 1446C-0, which deregulated the siting of generation.
You must admit that your application was not crystal clear about Texas law. I mean,
well, it wasn't crystal clear. This is a very lengthy application. There are thousands of representations made there, hundreds made about the various laws of Texas. But one thing is clear, that on September 1st, 1995, Texas law did not permit the Public Utility Commission, the instrumental defendant in this case, to conduct consistency review for the wind farms in question. Nonetheless, the plaintiffs here contend that the PUC and the and state defendants must be preempted because of some sort of vague obligation under federal law. But preemption has never been found to create state law, and it doesn't apply here anyway because there is no conflict between state and federal law. The court should affirm the district court's dismissal of the suit. The court need not reach the availability of a preemption cause of action because the alliance cannot survive Article 3 standing analysis, just like the district court found. Most obviously, the alliance's claims fail because they do not seek any remedy that can redress the injuries they allege. First of all, and most importantly, with regard to redressability, the only remedy that's provided by federal law is the remedy specified in Section 1458 of the CZMA, and this is the review by the Secretary of Commerce of compliance of a state with the FOWL program and with federal law. That is an ongoing obligation of the Secretary of Commerce, as Judge Owen astutely noted. So if a party has a complaint about the way a state is administering its program, it is the duty of that party to bring that claim to the attention of the Secretary of Commerce, as the Alliance has now done, and let the Secretary of Commerce consider that complaint. In fact, the Secretary of Commerce, acting through NOAA, has investigated the Texas program on three separate occasions in the last 10 years, in 2001, 2005, and 2007, and in every situation has found the Texas program to be in compliance with federal law. So there is a mechanism in place for the federal government to consider the compliance of Texas with its program. Now, if the Alliance wants to have this claim considered, it needs to raise this claim to the Secretary of Commerce and have the Secretary determine what the appropriate remedy here is. Section 1458C of the CZMA provides that the remedy can range anywhere from withholding any portion of the annual allotment of funds to the state to completely revoking their certification under this program. So Congress has expressly given plenary authority over the appropriate remedy in this case to the Secretary of Commerce. What Congress has not done in this case is provided a private right of action or any private benefit that would be enforceable through judicial intervention such as this suit. So the state's position is that there simply is no right of action and there simply is no redress that can avail the plaintiffs in this case because Congress only intended one exclusive remedy, and that is for the Secretary of Commerce to consider the compliance with federal law. Now, Judge Owen noted that in 2007, NOAA issued a report indicating that there were gaps in Texas law regarding the novel issue of wind farms. So it's obvious that NOAA has considered this issue, and it's something that is an ongoing issue that they'll be looking at. But
it was a fairly oblique reference, you must admit. It wasn't a blessing or any kind of detailed examination. It was sort of a very oblique reference.
That is true. It was oblique. But as the Alliance has admitted here before the Court today, they have, in 2008, notified the Secretary of Commerce of the specific problems that they now raise in this case. And so and the Secretary of Commerce has subsequently sent a letter to Texas. These are all outside of the record, indicating that there is an issue that needs to be addressed regarding this alleged problem. But this is all just legal evidence that indicates that it is the obligation of the Secretary of Commerce, it's his purview to determine Texas compliance with that statute. There are other reasons why the relief in this case cannot redress the injuries claimed by the Alliance. First of all, the Alliance's proposed injunctive relief doesn't ask the state defendants to do anything at all. Now, they fall back on the declaratory judgment claims that they make, but neither of these declarations reasonably suggests any obligation on the part of the state defendants. The only obligation that they suggest is on the part of the wind farms to stop construction, and that does not suppose an obligation on the part of the PUC, especially when the PUC absolutely lacks any authority to consider the siting of these particular generation facilities. Now, it's also not redressable because the Alliance has not alleged that any particular state law is invalid or that any state law should be invalidated as a result of preemption. In their briefing, they have submitted, well, our argument really is that Article 1446C-0 should be invalidated. That's nowhere to be found in their complaint at all. But even if they could make the complaint that Article 1446-0 conflicts with federal law, that is not the current statute that's on the books. This complaint was filed in 2007, and at that time, and since 1999, the provision has been in Section 31.002 of the codified version of the Utilities Code, which is worded somewhat differently than the original Article 1446C-0. So we're not even talking about the statute that's even on the books. The relief they've asked is completely out of sync with what reality is in the law. I want to touch briefly on the 12B6 issues. If the court were to determine that for some reason the plaintiffs here did have standing to raise these claims, it could determine that there is no preemption claim available to the plaintiffs. First of all, there's no conflict between federal law and state law, and that is required for a preemption claim. This Court's recent decision, Judge Prado's recent decision in the Hawkins, Equal Access for El Paso versus Hawkins decision, recognizes that to raise a Supremacy Clause claim, you must indicate a conflict between a federal law and a state law or regulation. The defect in that case was that they had only alleged a conflict between federal law and the action of a state official, the director of the Texas Department of Health. Similarly, here we have an allegation that there is some federal law that conflicts with the actions of the state public utility commissioners. That is not sufficient to state a preemption claim under federal law. Moreover, Section 1455D of the CZMA, which is the basis for plaintiff's complaint here, that there are certain requirements that Texas must follow, is not really stated in terms of an obligation on the part of the state. It's stated as an obligation on the part of the Secretary of Commerce. These are criteria that the Secretary of Commerce must or may consider in evaluating an application for federal funds. Congress clearly intended that this was to be within the parameters of the decision-making power of the Secretary of Commerce and should not be considered an affirmative positive obligation on the part of a state who happens to receive funds.
That's 1455D.
Yes, Your Honor, that's Section 1455D of the Coastal Zone Management Act. Moreover, the Alliance looks at the Coastal Management Program, which is a Texas program, as authority for preemption here. But the CMP is not federal law. It's a state-created, state-designed program that received only federal approval. That cannot be considered federal law because every state could conceive of a different program that might eventually receive federal sanction. And that can't be federal law if it's different in every single state. Moreover, the program doesn't require consistency review in any case. The only asserted basis for preemption they have is this outdated citation in the statute. But there's never been any case that's recognized a principle of preemption by estoppel, that is based on a representation made by a state in a plan. And this is where Sanchez, or the Planned Parenthood versus Sanchez case that they rely on so strongly for their position, is distinguishable. That case did not involve an obligation, did involve an obligation established by federal law under the Public Health Service Act. In this case, what we have is just a criterion for consideration of the program imposed on the Secretary of Commerce. And that is what the single most important distinction of the Planned Parenthood case is. Planned Parenthood did recognize that the goal of preemption is to determine congressional intent, and it is clear here that the intention of Congress was to put these kinds of complaints within the purview of the Secretary of Commerce. For that reason, we'd ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court below.
May it please the court, I'm Bill Kroger, and I represent Iberdrola Renewables in this case, and I'm speaking on Iberdrola's behalf and also Pattern Gulf Wind, the two private wind farms in this case. Let me just generally begin by stating that the alternative finding by the district court in this case, granting the 12B6 motions to dismiss as to the private wind farm defendants, is correctly decided. Where we are in this case is that we only have constitutional claims of preemption and due process. Originally, when this case was filed, it's helpful to remember that the plaintiffs were looking into Endangered Species Act claims, Clean Water Act claims, and other potential causes of action against the defendants. And the Army Corps of Engineers and Texas Parks and Wildlife and other agencies have looked at these wind farms and have found no violations and no problems. It's not correct to say that there's been no review or oversight by any governmental agencies with regards to these wind farms. Because they were not able to find anything that the defendants did that violated any state or federal law, they amended their petition only to make out these constitutional claims. And it's Hornbook law, and we've cited the cases in our brief, that there's no basis for asserting a preemption clause or due process claim against the private defendants. And in fact, they've conceded that they've dropped their due process claim against the private wind farm defendants. But I do want to speak to some of the issues that were raised by Mr. Blackburn. I think there has been, it is true that the coastal management plan provided by the state is not a model of clarity. But I also think they misstate what it actually says, because it is worded in terms of the state of Texas regulates public utilities, and it's public utility generation that is mentioned in that coastal management plan. And if you looked at either 1446C or 1446C-O, which was the amended version of that statute, at all times, Texas has had exemptions for generation.
Yeah, but that plan did not mention wholesale generation of electricity. It didn't say, well, we want you to know, however, that in our definition of public utilities, there's a big gap.
That's right. It doesn't come out and identify that they don't regulate generation that's not a public utility. So, and they also cited the mention in the plan, the old statute of 1446-0. And what is important is that before the Coastal Management Plan was filed in October of 95, that law had already been repealed. And 1446, the new 1446, was already in effect. It was effective as of September of 95. So when they originally pled their case, and if you look at the current pleading that they have on file, they claim that they originally had rights to a CCN process for generation when the plan was filed, and that Texas changed the law in 99 to take away those rights. That is not correct. When the Coastal Management Plan was filed, entities like Coastal Habitat Alliance did not have rights to have a consistency hearing for exempt wholesale generators, and these wind farms would have been exempt wholesale generators back in 95. A second point. There was discussion about NOAA recognizing that there's gaps in the 1997 report, I believe. They recognize there's a gaps for wind farms. There is a process under the CZMA where the public can participate if there are complaints about the coastal management program. And Coastal Habitat Alliance had at least four opportunities to make the very complaints that they're making in this case, when the plan was filed, and then in 2001, 2005, and 2007, when the plan was reviewed. And at no time did they avail themselves of the remedy or the procedural right that's granted to them under the statute. Their claim is predicated on rewriting the CZMA to give them rights that the CZMA doesn't provide. Another point I want to make is, where is the conflict between a Texas statute and a federal statute? And that does not exist. Let's suppose there was no coastal management plan, and you looked at just Texas's method for regulating electric utilities and whatever the federal law provides. There's no conflict there. If they have, their case is predicated upon what Texas said in its coastal management plan about how Texas regulates utilities. But the coastal management plan submitted by the state of Texas is not a federal statute. And if there's a conflict between the plan and how Texas actually provides for regulation of utilities, that doesn't give rise to a preemption law claim. And finally, I want to say this, that they have, on the remedy part of their case today, they have made some claims that, first, that they concede that they're not asking for injunctive relief as to the existing wind farms. First, they have not asked for injunctive relief against any government agency in this case. That's one of the important differences between this case and Planned Parenthood. Those are very different cases. In Planned Parenthood, there was a state statute that conflicted with a federal statute The plaintiffs in Planned Parenthood were entitled to receive funding under the federal statute, but for this state statute, so they had a monetary harm. And they sought to enjoin the state government from enforcing that state statute. In this case, there's no monetary harm that they're making. They're not claiming they would have gotten funding under the CZMA. They haven't identified a state statute in their petition that they want to strike down. They haven't asked for that remedy. They haven't sought an injunction against the state government. And so it's a completely different case. The only thing they've sought injunctive relief is as to the private wind farm defendants, and they now concede that for the existing wind farms, which is what our clients have, there would not be a basis to ask for that relief. And that goes to standing, because part of the, under the Lujan case, one of the things, one of the elements that is looked at is whether the injury is redressable. And both of our wind farms have existing operations. They're already generating electricity for South Texas. And with that, I'll just add one last final point, and that is that Coastal Habitat Alliance, just to recap, on the 12B6 motion has not complained about that issue in their briefing on appeal, so that point has been waived by them. Unless there's any further questions, I'll give that some time.
May it please the Court, what Mr. Blackburn has asked is that I'll take the full rebuttal period if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
And the second thing is that although I'm going to attempt to answer Judge Reveley's questions right now, we would request leave if it's appropriate to submit to a letter brief subsequently.
That's fine.
Okay.
When a week from today, is that sufficient time?
Yes.
Okay.
Give them 2 or 3 days to reply.
That's fine. They get it by Tuesday. You guys respond by Friday?
That would be fine.
Okay. This is my best answer in the 20 minutes I've had to prepare for Judge Reveley. The right of action that we assert, there are two parts to it. One part comes under the Supremacy Clause, and in order to win under the Supremacy Clause, we must show an actual conflict between the statute that we're challenging, that is the statute that they rely on, and some mandates of federal law. And the second cause of action comes under the Due Process Clause, and what we must show is that some action by the state, in this case, the adoption of this law, takes away a property right that we previously had. I want to focus on the actual conflicts. I think that was the thrust of your question. The first actual conflict, all of these depend on the structure of the act, which says Texas doesn't have to do anything, but once they apply for and agree to participate in the Coastal Zone Management Act program, then they must follow various provisions of the Coastal Zone Management Act, many of which are in 16 U.S.C. 1455, the same statute that opposing counsel cited. Perhaps the most important provision where there's an actual conflict is that the federal law requires that the provisions on that Texas will use to participate must be stated in the coastal management program. It is not sufficient for them to say, oops, we forgot, which seems to be their position. And the cites for that, 16 CFR 1455D, little d, 2, big D, and 16 USC and 15 CFR 923.41-44. The statute that
all the defendants rely on is not in the coastal management program. It cannot be used to justify a way around the program. That's an actual conflict. The second actual conflict is that the federal law expressly states that energy generating facilities, including wind farms — they don't use wind farms, the way they define energy generating facilities include wind farms — must be regulated. 16 U.S.C. 1455 little d 2 H and 1436 6 and 1455 D 14. They're various provisions, but they all amount to that. And the Code of Federal Registration Regulations 15 CFR 923.13. This statute, which is invalid in the coastal zone, purports to exempt wind farms. We do challenge a statute. The relief that we seek is a declaratory judgment that explains what must happen because that statute is invalid. The third actual conflict is that the statute and federal regulations specifically require consistency review that allows interested and affected parties, and that would be us, to participate in the consistency review process. 1455D, 11, subparts A to C, and 923.13A to D. This statute conflicts with federal law because it purports to say there is no consistency review process in which we can participate. It's not enough to say that somebody else can participate. And the fourth actual conflict is that what Texas, under the Coastal Zone Management Act, which is federal law, what Texas commits to do in the plan, Texas must do. And that's the whole structure of the act. It's 1455, I believe it's D is the primary statement of that. And in our reply brief, footnote 1 at page 2, we collect a whole series of four or five citations in the coastal management plan itself where Texas recognizes it has obligations with respect to following its commitments for energy generating facilities. And I have one more that I'll cite right now. Federal law specifically says if the state wants to change what it has submitted, the state has the burden, not us. The state has the burden to inform the federal government of the change, and they have never done that. And you can read anywhere on the web or anywhere else, the state has never said what we wrote in the coastal management program is incorrect or that it's been changed. Now, Your Honor asked, what is the federal government's obligation with respect to if the state did that? And I attempted to answer it. They do have some discretion. That's the way our federal system works. We do not have the right, under federal law or any other source that I know, to compel the federal government to do anything. We can write speeches. We can write letters. We can submit all the information we want, and the secretary has no duty whatsoever that I know, under the federal law or otherwise, to even read it. The state has the duty under federal law, and that's 16 U.S.C. 1455 E1 and 3 and 15 CFR 923.80-84. The state has the duty to tell the government if something changes. And then the federal government has to do something. By making this change, by using this other statute, the state is in actual conflict with its duties. And by the way, each of the federal sites I gave you, the coastal management program written by the state acknowledges those duties.
Thank you. Your time's up.
Thank you.
Court will be in recess till